where we've been and what made us who we are, then, you know, and how we got there. And so that, you know, I guess it's kind of along the same lines.
I always heard this podcast, for those who don't study history, they're doomed to repeat it. And for those of us who do study history, we warn others and then are doomed to watch them repeat it.
There you go. That's good. I like that tag right there. That's good.
Here's an interesting thing about that. From history, in those seasons of time when society has fallen to their doom, it's always been the church that has been the mainstay and the stability. It's the church that was the stability in the Dark Ages. It was the church that was the stability in the First Great Awakening and the Second Great Awakening, both which led to major political events in our history.
No doubt.
It's always been the rock, the foundation, the bedrock that society has leaned on. And so, yeah, we see it coming, but it helps us prepare too.
Definitely, definitely. And I just taught about the First Great Awakening in my civics class. So, no doubt, both of those points are good. So, as we look back at 1 Corinthians 8, we looked at Corinthian Christians. What did we see there in 1 Corinthians 8 about what was just a brief one sentence, two sentences about 1 Corinthians 8, about what Corinthians basically what an idol meant to 1 Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 8, that it was knowing about, let me get context. 1 Corinthians 10, Paul's mentioning again about eating meat and eating sacrificed meat. So what about, this is kind of the same thing we've looked at in 8 and 9 to some degree, but in 8, what was the summary about an idol to Corinthians, Corinthian Christians? What was determined there in 1 Corinthians 8? Some of you guys taught something in there. What have we learned from 8? We have a Bueller moment. There we go. There we go. That's yeah. An idol's nothing. And so even knowing that eating meat, sacrificing an idol was okay. Now, what was the caveat with that? What was the next step? Unless it offends. Okay. There we go. Good. So 1 Corinthians 9, what did we have there? It's important to Christians to give up certain things, their rights, even good things if it meant winning the race, right? I wasn't here last week, but I'm assuming that's what was where we were at. So 8 and 9 build up to 10. And so, 10, Paul refers to Israel's history, to alert the Corinthians. This section is 22 verses. We will not get through 22 verses today. I'll just go ahead and say that. easily too. We'll see how far we get. I know we're not going to get to 22. The second half of that would be so appropriate. We could skip to do the second half because it'd be appropriate on Communion Sunday for sure. Let's go ahead and read the first, 11. We'll get 1 through 11. Let's do that. Let's just do 1 through 11 right now. We'll go with that. Volunteer. 1 Corinthians 10, 1 through 11. Excuse me. Yeah, sure. I guess we could read the whole context. If you want to read 1 through 11, go through 11. Thank you. Let's start with this. It's the Lord plays with numbers a lot in Scripture, and he did hear through Paul. There were five privileges or five blessings that Paul mentioned that the Hebrews or Israelites had, which led to five warnings that he gave the Corinthians. I don't know what the significance of five. I really didn't investigate or look into it, but I just saw that there were five and thought that was interesting. I really didn't delve into the significance there. But it was, other than that, maybe it was a good sermon, good message in 5 points and 5 points. So in the first few verses there were the five privileges, the five historical moments. And then within four verses toward the end there that Jennifer read for us, there were the five warnings within four verses. So everything kind of wrapped up nicely, Paul did for us. And I keep, have a note there, it cuts off. It's on the scripture it leaves on. Okay. I'm just looking at one of Spurgeon's quotes here. The next lesson, I've got a great C.S. Lewis and a great Charles Spurgeon quote. This lesson, there weren't a whole lot of those available. So I will say this, Spurgeon did say, and I do like this, "You see then, dear brethren, that the possession of privileges is not everything. Paul would not have us to be ignorant that all those who were with Moses in the wilderness had privileges of a very high order. Did they not all pass through the Red Sea and so escape from their powerful and cruel foes? Did they not all drink of water which gushed forth from the flinty rock? Were they not all fed with manna from heaven? Yet their privileges did not save them. For while they had the five privileges mentioned in those four verses, they all fell into the five great sins of which we were about to read. And so their privileges, instead of being a blessing to them, only increased their condemnation." And then he goes into the next section there. "Or warnings, for just as they were overthrown in the wilderness, so may we be, notwithstanding all the gospel privileges which we enjoy, if we are not true believers in the Lord Jesus Christ. If the life of Christ is not in our souls, all the privileges of the Church of God cannot save us. These things were our examples." Now, I could just read that and the whole lesson's done. But Spurgeon definitely had a way with words that many of us obviously do not. So let's, that being said, I say I didn't, obviously he did have a catchy quote, I guess, this morning. We may come back to look at that at the end. So let's look at verse 1. Some of your translations will say "moreover," some will say "for," and I think that a lot of them would prefer "for." which does tie in back to what we read in chapter 9. It marks the connection to what we looked at there with the self-denial and the effort that goes into being an athlete. With being a runner, being a boxer, which I looked at last week. So that being said, he then says, "For I do not want you to be unaware." That's the next part of that first verse, which is the formula when something important is to be presented. Makes sense, doesn't it? I want you to know. I mean, you think about it. Well, I want you to know something. I mean, if you had something important to tell somebody, hey, I want you to know something. I don't want you to be unaware of this. Paul used the same language in reference to Israel's salvation back in Romans 11:25. I don't believe he used that very often. I believe that was only a couple of times he used it. I didn't write that down, but if I remember reading that. So Romans 11:25, he used that. Well, I do not want you to be unaware. And I think that's the only two times he used that language. So that's very specific, very important for Paul to use that picture there for the Corinthians, considering he wrote these, you know, two long letters to the Corinthians, that's the time he used it. So he's bringing back, what he's bringing back is the history of the Israelites. And so, you know, the next is fathers or forefathers. He's drawn the conclusion that the Hebrew or Israelite forefathers were the spiritual forefathers of the Gentile believers there in Corinth. So he's tying the Christian believers to the the Israelites. And then let's move to the next phrase there, pass through the cloud. Okay. This is where we can let's look at Exodus 13:21-22. We're going to be going back to Exodus and Numbers quite frequently today. So if you want to get your page turner ready to go back to Exodus and Numbers, somebody or a couple of somebodies. So Exodus 13:21-22. Casey, you got that? I saw you flipping. 21 through 22. Okay, so what's the idea here is that Paul's and the people of Corinth, do they have any idea about this?
The Jews did,
but did the Gentiles? No, probably not. So Exactly. I was about to throw out the Shekinah glory right there. You're right on target. So definitely. So during the day, shelter from the brutal desert sun. So during the day, the Lord provides shelter. During the night, it was the pillar of fire, and it was the constant reminder of God's Shekinah glory and the Lord's presence. So the Jews knew this. We've reminded the Jews that here's your history, and he's telling the Gentiles that didn't know this. This is your history. You need to you know, understand. So here's the privilege. Well, you know, of course, he's leading up to the warnings. So, that being said, the next section there, all passed through the sea, all baptized into Moses. Now, there's a picture here. And are we still Exodus 14 will be the next reference. So all passed through the sea, all baptized into Moses. Exodus 14, and it's 21 through 31. It's a long reference there. So I don't know if we're going to read all 10 or 11 verses there, but all Israel came through the Red Sea. We all know the story. I don't use the word story. I don't like that. Narrative, thank you. I don't like using the word story. We all know the narrative. We all know what happened. I mean, Exodus 14, 21 through 31 tells us. All Israel came through the Red Sea. There's the incredible power of the wall of water. I don't know. I mean, the only thing, I mean, can you imagine you're coming through? I mean, can you see the fish swim in the wall of water? According to Disney. But wouldn't you see it? I mean, if the wall of water is there, I mean, wouldn't you see? I don't know. I don't know what you see. I'm getting over there. I'm getting away from, you're moving. But, kids will look. But, you're getting over. And it's dry. It's dry ground. I mean, it's not muddy. The Bible said it's dry. And so, and then, of course, Israelites make it across. And of course, in the narrative there, Moses turns and the water, the Egyptians are flooded. We can look at the passage. The Egyptian army is drowned. I read several. I wanted to see every one I read. Just kind of determined that this was, it signified the passing through the sea, the cloud, the guidance by the cloud. It was signifying that it was the baptism and the becoming of disciples of Moses at that point. And it was, and the quote by Hodge was, under obligation to recognize his divine commission and to submit to his authority. Which I that was the best of the quotes that I saw. And I had looked at, I can't even tell you how many of those that I looked, because I studied on that one and was looking and read, and I was just trying out, because I wrestled with this little section of the scripture, and of course I read 14, 21, 31. I guess we should read it. But the Israelites were under obligation to recognize Moses' divine commission and to submit to his authority because of that passage through the water and the following of the cloud. Which, if we, it's baptism, the cloud, that's the, the God, the Spirit leading. And so, that is the, what we're going to look at here in a second as, one of the blessings. We're looking at all under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and then all baptized into Moses. In the cloud and in the sea. So there's our privileges or our blessings that we're looking at that the Israelites went through. If we're numbering them, if you wanted to number 1 through 5. So I thought that was interesting too. I mean, I just, but because Paul mentions that all baptized into Moses in the cloud and the sea. So,
I read someone who, this is one of those staunch anti-Second Commandment violation people, like you can't have a picture of Jesus, picture of God, anything like that. And they pose this as an example. In my generation, when I think of this and I picture it online, I guarantee I pictured Charles Heston standing up
there. Hollywood. Yeah. Hollywood can't do any of this justice, so.
And also showed me that what you do with Hollywood and all that. I wouldn't want to get the video flag, but every Easter you get home from the service and there's the Ten Commandments on TV talking about the Passover. Wait, we just celebrated Easter, so you can see that, you know, Hollywood is going to show you the Passover at our Easter time for a very good reason.
That's because all the producers in Hollywood are Jewish.
Yeah.
While we're digressing, little Ishmael that comes out of the bed down toward Egypt, they believe that's where they crossed, and they have found what they think are Roman chariot wheels in that Ishmael.
Roman Egyptian.
I have a friend that's Egyptian.
Yeah, I have a friend that's owed that shallow spot in the Red Sea, and he has pictures of chariot wheels in the bottom of that plateau that goes across right there.
That's cool. No, that's cool. No, that's fine. I mean, that fits. I mean, it fits. I mean, if we wanted to get, I mean, we could have spent a whole section on that.
It's funny that biblical archaeology always proves that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Here's Nineveh. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely biblical archaeology is fascinating to me. No, you're fine. We're diving into 1 Corinthians 10. Okay. So, we're good with Exodus 14, 21 through 31. Do we need to read that one? We know what we're talking about? I mean, it's... Okay. All right. That actually gets us through the first two verses, believe it or not. Well, there was a lot of discussion, and I didn't want to get into it. When I was reading, there was a lot of discussion about whether that was immersion because you're in the, you know, you had the walls of water, or whether there was a sprinkle because of there was a lot of that.
Both sides actually of that it doesn't matter if you get wet or not, that doesn't save you.
And then there was that statement too. So there was a big discussion on that, and I didn't want to. We could have gone down a rabbit hole on that, but. Yeah. Right.
No, that's fine.
At this point,
Christ is following. He's not leading, right?
Right.
If you look at verse 4, that he followed them in the rock of Christ, and Christ is following. I'll let you get to that.
You're fine. You're fine.
It's a word picture that indicates that they were following Moses. And that's a whole other discussion.
Right. Yeah. But that's good. No, but all that's good. I mean, that was a whole discussion, and I was like, no, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of the baptism, and yeah, I was. I mean, I could see us going there for the next 30 minutes about the.
I mean, one part makes you bigger, one part makes you small. One part doesn't mean anything at all.
Oh, that's funny. As long as it's not Comic Sans. My child doesn't like Comic Sans. Okay. All right. So verse 3 and the first part of 4a, if you're playing along at home. So all ate the same spiritual food and all drank same spiritual drink. So that... that's in reference to manna and the water from the rock. So we could probably stay here and camp out on the manna for a while. This doesn't really have anything to do with this probably. Manna means what is it? What is this? What is it? What is this? The rock actually was, when I got to look at this, the rock doesn't, isn't really mentioned a whole lot of times. The rock wasn't mentioned specifically many times. That kind of surprised me. I thought that was... Right. Right. And when I got into that, I was like, oh, wait a minute. I thought it was, but yeah.
We're getting there.
In fact, they're segueing my next. They got my next. But y'all just mentioned y'all hit the next points basically about the obedience and about we're leading toward who actually gets to go in the promised land and who's left in the wilderness. And the warnings to the Corinthians that's the bridge of where they didn't get in the promised land. And if you're apt to be doing the same thing, and that's, y'all just mentioned that, the obedience, disobedience. So all of Israel was sustained by the miraculous provision of food and drink in the wilderness. There's spiritual and there's obviously some physical there. Exodus 16:35, let's just go ahead and get just so we can have the cross reference. 1635, that's the, and then while she's looking up that, 17:6, we're in Exodus still. Sure. And then somebody gets 17:6.
The people of Israel ate the manna 40 years till they came to habitable land, and they ate the manna till they came to the border of the land of Canaan.
Okay. There's your manna. 17:6. You got that one? Okay.
Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock, and you shall strike the rock, and water shall come out of it, and you shall drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel.
Okay, and then Numbers 20:11. I know we're just taking these just like a verse at a pop, but we don't. 2011, yes, ma'am.
And Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock with his staff twice, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their livestock.
Okay, and the livestock. So, definitely 40 years of manna. And then the livestock had enough water to drink. I mean, so, you know, this is definitely, you know, definitely a spiritual God thing here. I just wanted to get those out there so we're not just talking about them.
Just remember that in all of these, they received the provision of God under the regulation,
right,
of God. And let's not forget that the manna, you know, they had to go out every morning to collect manna. They could not collect 2 days worth of manna except on the evening of the Sabbath. But they had to go get it every day. And if they tried to collect more, like, well, I got to go run errands tomorrow, so I'm going to get a little extra for tomorrow. Well, it would rot overnight. It wouldn't keep.
Right.
So there's God's regulation. God's regulation in the water from the rock when he told Moses to strike the rock the first time. But they told Moses to speak to the rock the second time. So right. All of that is under God's regulation.
It's all under God, right. And then we're going to mention here in a few minutes, if we get there, about the ones that grumbled about the manna and if we only had the Egyptian food. And yeah, we're going to get to that in a second, too. You know, and that's kind of how I think, I envision it. It's like a dumpling. But I don't know.
Well, it was like dew on the ground. That's how the Bible describes it.
Mm-hmm.
They would go out and they would collect it, and then they would make their cakes out of it. Yeah, they didn't have the flour.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have the wheat to grind to make the flour. And so they had to have something to make the bread. So they would collect the manna, and they would make the cakes and cook it.
That's kind of envision what it looked like. I don't know. Dumplings. Oh well, that's just that. When I was a kid, that's what I envisioned was dumplings. But. And then so. I'm not sure who the commentator was because it was on a. They didn't give the person credit, but it does the second part of this chapter actually the second part of this passage leads into communion, Lord's Supper, and how. This ties into the Lord's Supper, the manna and the water, the spiritual food and drink, and then how it ties into 1 Corinthians 11. Somebody else is teaching that. I don't want to get into that one. I don't want to step on toes. Brother Lamar says somebody else is teaching that one. So, so. the rock, the spiritual rock, what's the picture of a rock in the Bible quite frequently or often? Okay, Christ. Okay, in the Old Testament, what do we see as the rod? What's the picture of rod? Well, I've even got Rusty looking quizzically. Yeah.
I'm not following the question.
Okay, I'm maybe not asking it the right way. Well, that's New Testament. Little Rock.
I'm counting something in looking at the passage I was going through, Jacob's Ladder, that whole set of references there. It makes a point of saying that Jacob rested on a rock.
Yeah.
I can't imagine sleeping.
Oh, I know, that would...
But when he woke up the next day after his encounter with the Lord, it says that he used that rock to establish an altar. So the often our rocks, the rocks in the Old Testament would be a number of rocks to be the place where God's presence was.
Okay, God's presence. So... closely associated with God, something closely associated with God's presence or God. I kept seeing that time and time again in this study. So that was the association. Was
that
God?
That was the bridge I was talking about a minute ago. He's beginning to bridge Old Testament history to New Testament theology, if you believe.
Right.
He's bridging all this Old Testament stuff with Christ.
Right. So in the New Testament, we see Christ as the rock. In the Old Testament, we're seeing God's presence, things associated with God. So the rock is the spiritual rock, one provided by the Spirit, and empowering the people. The rock, you're getting the water from the rock. Well, who we're getting the water from? We're getting the water from God, from the Lord. So, metaphorically, I would say that.
When Jesus uses the rock in his teaching, anyone who hears my word and does it is like a wise man who builds his house on the rock. I don't know when Jesus said that, if he was indicating, the foundation of the Ten Commandments, laws, the 10 words written on stone tablets. I don't know if he was indicating, the rock in the wilderness that gave the water. I mean, he might be making a reference to both of them.
To himself.
Yeah. I mean, certainly to himself, but, there's this thread woven through Old Testament into the New Testament that Paul continually says in several places, remember, I don't want you to miss this, the connection between all of these references. So, I've never thought about Christ being the actual rock of a theophany. But it's certainly metaphorical. Yeah. We could ascribe, the water being provided by God through Christ, the
second person of Godhead, through whom all things were created. The prophets, as they talk about the chief cornerstone, they're clear to say that Christ is the chief cornerstone. The stone was rejected by the builders. That's a picture of Israel. They rejected Christ as having part and parcel with Judaism, the form of Judaism, but now he's become the chief cornerstone. It's the thing, he's the thing upon which everything is built.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think there's a very clearly a thread through that. There's a thread through that from the Old Testament to the New Testament that I think is instructive. That's why Paul keeps bringing it up.
Right. Well, Paul here symbolically connects, obviously, Christ with the water-giving rock, because, here in verse 4, for they drank from the spiritual rock that followed them, and the rock was Christ. And, of course, rock is capitalized. So I'm gonna bring something else in here, because actually a couple of the commentaries did. Anders is the one I have credited here. He brings John 6:31-58, where the manna foreshadowed Christ, and I think he brings in the rock in there, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, this kind of parallels this about Jesus said, whoever believes me shall never thirst. And so John talks about, our fathers ate manna in the wilderness, as written, gave them bread from heaven to eat. And then he comes in later. This is in John 6:31-58. And then verse 35, I'm the bread of life, who comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes me shall never thirst. And so that's it moves on, obviously. I highlighted something else there, but I think that's a reference to the never thirsting, the water coming from that rock. The Old Testament also, I have some other notes here about the rock, about a king saving his people from their enemies, life-giving role as a victorious warrior. I have Ezekiel 47, water flowing from the temple, refresh the earth and its inhabitants, which is closely associated with God as king. There's so many cross-references with this. There's one, Psalm 65, 9 and 10, Jeremiah 17, 13, where God's earthly theme, water giving life to every creature near it from the rock. I just mentioned John 6:35. But in Paul spoke of water giving riches in the wilderness. Christ proved, paid forth the life-giving water of salvation on his people. Revelation 22, being the river of life, with all that significance of the rock and the river and the water coming from, let me get back to my 1 Corinthians. So I think what they were all saying was how all that kind of goes together. But I like that. I like seeing something, because I hadn't really paid much attention to that either, I don't think. I should have looked back on the word rock there is what I should have done. I might do that for next week. Okay. We've mentioned it all already, but verse 5, nevertheless, with most of them, God was not pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. of that generation who got to go to the promised land? Joshua and Caleb. All the other people from that generation, they died in the wilderness. Because one reason or another. And so Paul lists the reasons here as warnings to the Corinthians. Israelites did this. You're apt to do this too. You know, not so many words. He said, you know, so he gives those warnings here coming up. And this is where you're mentioned in the, hey, here's the church history. Here's what you're likely to do. So he's listed the privileges or the blessings. And then now he's about to list the warnings based off of those privileges. Just because the Israelites had these privileges and blessings did not mean that they were saved and went to the promised land. Only Joshua and Caleb did. And the other ones, hey, they messed up. So five times in four verses, Paul mentioned that all the Israelites shared the common experiences. All the Israelites are joined together in experiences of God's grace, just as all Corinthians are joined together in experiences of, and of course he's mentioned in the Lord's Supper and Christian baptism. And of course, you know, here we are today. So that's the tie-in. Here you are, Corinthians. You're getting experience, fellowship with the Lord's Supper and communion together, and with baptism. But don't rest on that, because you know everything else is going on in Corinth. You're likely to succumb to the same issues. Two. And then the next generation that, you know, yeah. So what time we have? My time's. Okay, yeah, I didn't think we would get, so we got through the privileges and the blessings. We'll go, we may go three Sundays on this passage. So, good. That was good. So Christ.